So a majority of the world's airplanes, commercial airliners flying today are Boeing. When the 777 came out, we thought that was a pretty data-rich airplane. And the 787 sitting in the hangar behind me produces 30 times as much data as the 777, and every succeeding generation will be even more.
As part of Boeing Digital Aviation, we develop software to provide operational efficiency for airline customers. The electronic flight bag is essentially the workflow for pilots from pre-flight through post-flight.
Up until about 3 or 4 years ago, pilots would carry 30 to 40 pounds worth of paper, their navigation charts, their en route charts, and the like.
Our developers chose Windows 10 because the flexibility of the platform, the ease of transitioning onto it, and some opportunities to present content that we've not had before.
Our future business is going to be more and more the accumulation of different applications. So the Universal Windows platform will help us to help the pilot with real-time decision making. So our business is all about harnessing that data coming off the airplane and making good use of it.
Forza Motorsport 6 Apex is the first step in the Forza franchise moving to Windows 10. It's a focused experience that brings the best of what Motorsport has to offer to a new player on the PC. Apex is actually a proof point of what first party can do with UWP and DirectX 12.
With the Universal Windows platform, we're able to drive it at 4K and 60 frames a second, the highest fidelity we've ever delivered. The universal aspect that's a real true promise for us is the ability to write our code once. We're still gonna tailor that experience so that it's the best thing you can get on Xbox, the best thing you can get on PC. But what it means is it's reduced the development time for us, and that really surfaces not only in the code that we write, but also the tool set that we get to use. And that's the thing that's gonna grow the most over time. Our goal as a first party is to make sure that that platform that everyone's running on is the best one that they can deliver games on.
Moving forward, all of our games are going to be shipping on Windows 10 and Xbox. The Universal Windows platform is great for the game developers and gamers alike. It's going to become even more powerful as a way of delivering amazing experiences across all of the devices in the Windows ecosystem.
Het grootste tech-evenement van Nederland. Op 4 en 5 oktober in de RAI Amsterdam. Kom naar Tech Days 2016. Bestel vandaag je ticket op techdays.nl.
Hey. Hey. Yeah. All right. Hello, everybody. Hope you guys enjoyed the keynote. Awesome. And the break, of course. Hope you guys got some good coffee, European coffee. All right, I'm going to start with the summary session today. My name is Petri. I'm originally Norwegian, so that's why I have to deal with this Norwegian accent to everything I say. But I'm sure you survive. I'm here to talk about Xamarin. And what I mean by this is that I want to create a very simple application from scratch that spans across a couple of platforms. But first of all, what is Xamarin? I know that we mentioned it a little bit in the keynote. We went through a couple of slides there. But what we really mean is that Windows could be the home for every developer. We got a tool set that enables you to write application for the universal Windows platform, Android devices, and iOS devices. And what I mean here is that we got a layer, you can see on the slide here, of shared code that can be reusable across of all of these devices or platforms. And the other cool thing is that with Xamarin, we enable you to develop for these platforms using C#. On top of this shared code, you would like to use native user interface so people get the proper native experience on the platform they're using. So you want to have a UI layer on top of your shared code that gives your end user that native experience. And then, of course, these devices are different. They behave differently. Some of the APIs are doing stuff differently from each other. So we need to get native access to some of the APIs. This could be like location service that where you need to query for the device and ask the device, say, hey, what is the current location I'm currently at? And then Xamarin is fully compatible with the Universal Windows platform. So you can use the shared C# code on a UWP as well. And a home for this is, of course, Visual Studio. So I'm going to just jump right into the demo. So I'm just going to switch over here. There we go. And here I am in Visual Studio. And I'm going to just go ahead and create a new project. And I'm going to select cross-platform. I'm going to start with a blank app. And I'm going to name it Earth Explorer. There we go. This is now create a new cross-platform project that supports shared code. It's going to be one project with shared code. Then it's going to have one project for each of the heads I want to support. So we got one head for Android, we got one head for iOS, and then lastly here, we got one head for Windows Phone 8. You can keep it there if you want to support it, but I'm going to delete it, and then I'm going to add a UWP here instead. So I'm going to right-click my solution, and I'm going to add a new project. And I'm going to go here and just select Universal. And I'm going to call this earthexplorer.uwp. And I'm going to just set the default platforms. And there we go. It will now go ahead and add this head to my solution. What's left is that I need to add a reference to the Earth Explorer shared code here into the references here. So I'm just going to right-click here and add a reference. I'm going to select Earth Explorer, which is the portable code, the one that's shared. I'm going to hit OK. And what I'm going to be developing today is a very simple application that will contain two controls. One of them is a list view with some data in it. And then I'm going to have a map view that actually shows me the location of what I select from this list view. But there's one more thing that I'm going to add to it, and this is the native API. I'm going to ask the device for the native location, and it's going to provide me with it, and then I'm going to update the map to that location. So it's very simple, but I'm going to do it for all these three platforms. And I'm going to just clean this up a little bit. And I'm going to start with the portable code here. And it automatically generated some code for me, so I'm going to go ahead and remove that. There we go. And I'm going to add a snippet I added before I started here. And I'm just going to finish up with the using statements here, like threading. There we go. So what this shared code is doing is that we're having a point of interest, which could be anything. It got a name, which in my case is going to be city names. Then it got a longitude and a latitude, which describes the location of this name. And then I have a function here, which is an async function that's named getGlobalListAsync. And what this function is doing is that once called, it will add two hard-coded locations, which will be Paris and Seattle, where I'm currently living. And then it's going to do something else, which is pretty cool. It's going to use inversion control to get current POA async, which will ask the device for the location. And we need to kind of fill in, you can think of this as like a delegate. So we need to add this somewhere on the native platform. But the function is there. And you can think of this a little bit like an interface. OK, so I'm just going to save this. And actually, I'm going to rename this class to point of. There we go. So the first platform I want to write code for is the UWP, which is by far the easiest one. So I'm going to go and set this as a startup project. And the first thing that I want to do is to create the user interface. And to do this, I can use the main page of XAML, which is a kind of a language we use to describe user interfaces. Anyone here developed a UWP before? Or an app for Windows, phone? OK, so you guys know what this is all about. That's good. But I'm still going to explain it. So in this page, I'm going to add two controls. The first one will be the list view, and the second one will be the map. So I'm going to add this XAML here. Just drag it in. As you can see, I'm having two rows. The first row will have the list view with a text block in it, which would kind of just be the content of my list view for every row. Then I'm going to have another map control, which we need to define the namespace for. So I'm just going to add this one here. And then we're going to do using windows.ui.xaml. And there we have it, controls.map. And this will be my map control. So once I have the user interface ready, I'm actually ready to go into my code behind for this and start writing code. So I'm going to just close this one down, and this one too. And this is the code for the page that I just made a design for. So what I'm going to do here is that I'm going to override a function called onNavigatedTo. This function will call every time I navigate to this page. And this is the startup page for my project. So this is the first thing that will happen when I launch this application here. So what I want to do here is that, first of all, I need to set the data source of the map that I added, which will be the POI list. And for every item that I click in this one, I'm going to launch this event. And then we're going to go ahead and set the data source to the one that we have in our shared code. And since this is an async function, we need to add the async keyword here to add the beauty of C#. And then we're going to need to define the actual functions, like the POI list event and the move to function. So I'm just going to add here these two functions. And what this does is that it simply takes the data that we had in the list view, and then it passes it to a function called move to, which is then the actual meat of this functionality. It asks for the location of the device, and it sets the map to this location. So let's go and see here. There we go. It takes the POI. Like if you select, for example, Seattle, it takes the longitude and latitude, passes through the move to function, and locates the map on top of it. So I'm just going to go ahead and save this. And the last thing that I want to do is to add the actual land expression to query for the location. So here we are. We create a new point of interest. And we use the geolocator that comes with the Universal Windows platform. This is the API to query for a location on Windows. And then we grab the position, which is an async function. So once this one is done, we'll get the position. We get to create the current POI. And then this will return, enabling this function to complete. And the data source will then be set. So let's go ahead and try to see if we can run this. So I'm just going to right-click here, and I'm going to build this. Oh, did I do something here? Oh, yeah. It didn't. Oh, yeah, the namespace. Oh, yeah. My. That's what I called it. My. Thank you. That should fix it. Build. Looks better. And let's go ahead and deploy this. And I have the emulator already running. And let's go ahead and launch this as well. I'm going to do this in the emulator. So I need to select. So what I did now, it was deploy it locally to my machine. You can do that too. I'll show you that later. But I'm going to go ahead and do this on this emulator. And I'm just going to hit play here. And the emulator will then show up. The first time you do this, it might take a little bit of time. But I pre-did this. So let's see if this one deploys. Oh, OK, it still opens up here. Oh, yeah. There's one more thing that I need to do, and that is to ask, let the application have permissions to access the location. So let's first go and do that. And I can do that from the manifest and go to capabilities. And then I enable locations here to just give the application permission to use location. You just need to explicitly set that. Then I can try again. Okay. Let's do build. Then. Deploy. Deploy started. Deploy succeeded. Let's try it one more time. There we go. It's asked for my permission. I say yes. And there you have the list. And I can click Paris. That's currently where it's located. Or Seattle, which I currently live. I actually live right there. And just where I am, this will take me now to Redmond, because that's where I set the emulator to where I am. But you can set those settings in the emulator settings here. All right, so that's for Windows. Let's go ahead and try Android. So I'm going to change into this project. I'm going to set this as a startup and dive right into it. So the first thing that I want to do is to go ahead and create the user interface. And this is done in main.axml. This is kind of looks a little bit like XAML, like the one I use for Windows, but it's actually for Android. And it's XML. But it does describe the user interface. I'm going to show you that really soon. But first, I'm going to use this window called Document Outline. And I can go in and see what's happening in the user interface here. So I can go ahead and delete the automatically generated button here. There we go. It just leaves me with a clean layout. And then I can go into my toolbox and add a list view. I can just drag it in there. We'll just automatically full screen. And then for the map control, I'm going to actually do something different here. Because it takes a lot of time to set up support for Google Maps and the local APIs for that. It does exist, the map control, but it requires this key and everything. So I'm going to do something else. I'm going to ask the device to open the map by using an intent. Does anyone here know what an intent is? So you guys, I assume a lot of you guys are Android developers as well? Not everyone? OK, cool. So what we have here is then the simple layout. I'm going to go into main activity, which the code is being called from. And I'm going to remove the automatically generated items here, like the button. There we go. And the first thing I'm going to need here is to do the droid init function. And what this is doing is that it's getting the let me see, the list view that we added to the design by curing for the ID. So you can't just reference it directly like we did on the Universal Windows platform, but you need to do the use this ID. And then we're going to add the item click just as we did in the previous example. And then we're going to do the data source. So we're going to need to add the async keyword here. And thanks to Xamarin and C#, we're going to use this inside of the Android solution. And then we are going to have to define this one, which will be just a list. There we go. It's going to be named data source. And then we're going to have to add the using for this one. But when it comes to doing the data binding between the control that you see and the data that's going to populate the control, we need to have something that we call an adapter. And this adapter will simply just set the data off the list view that we're having to what we want it to be. So I'm going to go ahead and add a new class. So add new item. I'm going to do class. I'm going to call this table source. There we go. OK. And what this code is doing is that we're creating a base adapter using the point of interest as a type. And then it's using the this here as an indexer for us to go through this. And then it's going to return the layout for our control. So basically, this layout is taking the source from our data set into the adapter. Then it sets the layout of our control. So basically, it's very simple. You have only the text one element, so we need to find it again. And then we set the text property to our POI's name. So this is going to be like Seattle or Paris or whatever you add there. OK, so I'm going to go back to main activity again. And I'm going to add the event handler for every row that you click. And what this is doing is that it's taking the point of interest from the selected item that we just clicked on, and then it's taking the creating a URI with the geo keyword with a longitude and latitude. And this is what we're going to be using as the intent. So we're going to have an intent of asking our device to show us the map position of this given coordinate. And the last line here just executes this intent. So I can go ahead and try to launch it. Hopefully, it will be simpler. All right, there we go. And there we have the application now running. We got the list view control filling the entire screen. And if I click Seattle here, it's going to open up the Google view and show me Seattle. This is a bit closer, so now I can actually show you exactly where I live here. All right. So I'm going to add the last element here, which is the current position this device is currently at. So I'm going to go into this here. And just as in Windows, the thing that I forgot is to enable permission for me to use the location service on the native device. So I'm going to go into properties here and then assembly info. I'm going to add two lines here, which is these two. And I need to add the Android using here. And what these two lines are giving me access to is to get the find location and the course location. I'm going to use the find location today just to show you how this works. So this is basically the capabilities. All right. So the next thing, we need to add the interface for getting the location. So I'm going to go here and say location listener. There we go. And we need to actually implement this. I'm just going to use the locations. And you can implement this interface normally, but I've already done it on the snippet, so I'll just do it here. And this gives us four events, and we're only interested in one of them for now. And this is the on-location change that will be fired if the location of the device is being updated or changed. And what we do here is something interesting with a wait event, which is a manual reset event. Does anyone know about this kind of manual reset event pattern? There's a couple. Okay, good. I'm going to go into it, so don't worry. So what we have is, if the location is changed, we update our location, and then we set this wait event. And you can think of this wait event as kind of like a true or false. It's somewhere in the code is waiting for this event to be true or be set, and then the code will continue. So let's take a look at this. And I'm going to initialize my location manager, which is this function here. It's just going to use the native location manager to query for the position. I'm going to add this one here too for link. And what we make here is that we're getting a location manager, and then we ask for a find accuracy on the map, and then it's going to use this one to request a location update. So we need to call this function also from our uncreated event here. There we go. And then the last thing is to actually do the query for our location. And this is where we're doing the manual reset event. Because we don't directly support ASIC operations on the native Android platform, what we're using here is this wait event. So this is just simply kind of blocking. You think of this as a non-blocking thread. So it's just there. It's waiting for this one to set. And this one, it will be set once the location has been updated in our location change event. And once this is done, it will return this one. And once this is returned, our data source will be set. So at this point, our data source will be updated, and we can proceed with the application. So let's go ahead and build this. I might need to do this again. Just launch it without the debugger. All right, now we have exactly here, which is our new location. And this will bring me into the intent to Redmond's building, almost building 9, which I used to work in, but I don't work there anymore. I kind of relocated, but all right. So that's Android platform working using the shared code and native APIs as well as a native user interface experience. So let's go ahead for the last platform, which will be iOS. So I can just go ahead and close this. And I'm running the latest bits here, so this might be a little bit unstable, but this is all real code, so I know that you're here to see real code. Let's go ahead and set this as the startup project. And you can see there's a green icon here. This means that I'm now remotely connected to a MacBook, which enables me to do a remote emulation right here on Windows. So I can just do development here. I can run the emulator here remotely from MacBook, which is pretty cool. So I'm just going to clean this up a little bit so you guys can see what I'm doing. And I'm going to open the main storyboard. As with the other platforms, I'm going to start with the user interface. So I'm just going to let this one load. It's now doing this remotely through the Mac. And just give it a little bit of time. I know the network can be a little bit slow today. Hopefully, it's not going to be. There we go. There we have the default template up and running. So what I can do here is to go back to the document outline, and I'm just going to go and delete what I'm having here for. I can delete this one here, like, there we go. And then I'm going to add two controls. So here I'm going to use the actual map control, so I can start with that. So we can do a map view. I'm just going to drag it out there. And this is a visual designer, so I can just put it down there, and I can resize it a little bit. Or if you're familiar with this kind of development, you can also click one more time to set the constraints of this one. Just drag them down to where you want them. There we go. And then I want to add the table. And this is here. I just drag it on top of this one. And then I'll just do a little bit of resizing to make this beautiful design look awesome. Also, I'm just going to, just to be aware, if I go into document outline, you can see that the table view comes with three default cells. So just going to go ahead and just delete those. It makes everything a bit simpler. So there we go. And now I can just see if I can reach this thing. There we go. It's always fun to work with a low resolution. All right, there we go. And this is my table view. So if I click properties here, I can set the name. So I'm going to call this my table. Then I'm going to call this one my map. I guess you guys guessed that. So once I'm done with this beautiful user interface, I'm a developer, so my user interface tends to get like colder colors and a bit blocky, but someone else can fix that. I'm just going to go and write the code. And for iOS, we still need kind of the same thing. We need to add kind of a layer between the controls here and the data source. So I'm going to go ahead and add a new class, new item. And I'm going to select Apple from this menu in a class. And I'm going to name this table source. There we go. And I also have this one already here. First of all, I'm just going to remove the using to monotouch. I'm not going to be using those today. I'm going to actually use UIKit. All right. And then let's see. We have the table source here. And we need to add a reference to UIKit. There we go. As well as foundation for getting the NS index path. There we go. And I think that's it. So what we're doing here is that we're creating cells from our data source. And it got an onClick event that will be called for every row that you select. So this is just invoking the onClick event. And then, as with Android, we define the layout of our control. In this case, we're setting the text element to become the name of the current city we're interested in. So quickly going back here, I'll remove this button. There we go. And I'm going to initialize the data source. So I think it's here. And this one is also needing the kind of same click handlers. And this is where it's actually getting the coordinates. And then it's setting the region of my map, kind of where you wanted the view to be, to that coordinate with a span of 0.1 degrees. So you can think of this like the zoom. All right, And let's also initialize the location manager soon. I just need to set the async keyword here because we're doing async operations. So I'm just going to call the initialized. Oops, it's going to be here. Initialize location manager. And this one needs a couple of declarations. So I'm going to add that one too. You can see the familiar manual reset event up here. I'm going to just add the threading reference here, and then let's see. We also need the last event handler, and I'll show you the code. There we go. And also this. There we go. And what this location manager does is that it starts location manager, and it asks for an accuracy of about 1,000 meters. And then it fires up this event if this location is being updated. And this is where we set the POI with the location and the name. And we also set the wait event, making our data source, this function complete, and our data source will be set because of this awaiting keyword. So I'm running some bits, so there's going to be a rendering issue in my list view, but I still want to try to run this. I'm just going to go in and add this one. I actually need to right-click here and view this with SAML. And I'm going to add these ones here too. Okay, let's try this. It's still green. And let's see if building is okay. There's something here. Let's see. Okay, let's try this one more time before we head over to Jeff. Okay. I'm sure it works. I can show you in the break. But it already took a little bit of time from Jeff, so I'm going to welcome Jeff on the stage to host a web app. I hope you like Xamarin, and I hope you guys give it a try, download the tool set, and start developing cross-platform applications. Thank you.
All right. I need just 30 seconds to set up, so... is my network... Yeah. Yeah, if you can plug that in, I'll get the slides. Slides. We'll start with the slides. So this is my, this goes in here, right? Need the cable for the phone. And then I need,
it didn't work. I forgot to set the emulator. It was trying to deploy to a device that I hadn't connected. I just need to set the emulator from the dropdown, and then it's up and running.
Okay. I got to warn you. It's right before lunch. And I'm the slowest talking speaker of the day. I can't help it. I live in the South in the U.S., and we just talk slow. So I'm going to try to keep it moving for you guys, because I know lunch is right around the corner. Petri already ran 5 minutes late, so I'll see if we can make it up. Now, I want to talk to you today about the web. And when I go around and talk to folks about the web, I hear all sorts of crazy reasons why they don't want to use the web to build apps. So I put those together in the top 5 myths about web apps. Okay, and we're going to go through those. Now, before I start, I actually want to make sure that we understand some of the constructs we have. I think most of us understand the concept of a packaged app, because it's just like your native apps, like your C# apps, where all of the code goes inside the package, and then that is shipped through the store. But we also have hosted web apps. And hosted web apps is where that content stays on the web server. And then when your app is opened, that content is loaded from the web server. So it's always up to date, it's always real time, it's always the latest version of your code. And it looks like just like any other app. Now, to make sure that I have you properly motivated to build web apps, let's go through a couple value props in this. All right, so first of all, if you want to use the web to build store applications, then you can actually keep the exact same workflow that you have for your web apps. You're probably already deploying to servers. You probably already have some favorite tools that you like, some test suites that you like. You get to keep all of those things in place and then build them into the store application and do even more with them. Second of all, you have access to a whole new API layer that we don't yet have in the web. And I'll talk more about this in a few minutes, but we have a lot of APIs available in the browser, more and more every day, but there are some that you still don't have. And so while you're in a hosted web app for Windows, we give you access to the entire WinRT service, so you can call any API you want from JavaScript. And the third thing is you can publish your web app. You can reach new users. There's whole generations of users who go to the store before they go to their browser to look for something. And you want to be there. While you're in the store, you can take advantage of things like in-app purchases and paying for your app. You can get the telemetry that you don't have in the web. There's a lot of really great things that you get from being in a store that just makes it worth it. All right, now about those myths. The first myth is that web apps suck. Now, I think I know why people say this. And it's mainly because yeah, see? This should be number 2. Okay, I'm going to pull Petri's number 1. I'm gonna move it to number 1. And I need your power too. It should be number 1. No, this should be 1 now.
Oh, yeah, this is 1. Yeah, 1.
Okay. Wow, right before lunch.
There we go.
I know. Delaying you right before lunch, huh? Okay, so this is why so many people think that web apps suck. Because when they're thinking about web apps, they have one of these in their head. They picture an app from 2003. And you know, this was the bomb in 2003. I mean, it was pretty awesome. You had your link farms, you had your little section for ads, you had your one image banner across the top. It rocked, right? So that's what a lot of people think about when they think about hosted web apps or web apps in general. The thing is that's just not the case. The web has matured. And there's actually a number of amazing applications that you use today and you don't even know that they're web apps. So just from the Windows Store itself, some of our top applications are web apps. Many of them are hosted web apps that actually pull their content from a web server because partners tend to love to use what they've already built for the web and bring it into apps. And we get great feedback about it. And, you know, building experiences for the web today, it's much easier to build great experiences than it has been in the past. I'm going to give you a quick example here. This is an app called Shazam. It's an app that you, if you haven't used it before, you open the app, whenever there's music playing, it'll identify the music for you. Users love it. They say things like, it's quick, it's fast. They never say, it's web. They have no idea it's web. They shouldn't know it's web. How it works is they actually have a C++ component to their application too. And that's where all the crazy heavy processing happens. Whenever they take that audio file, they send it to that C++ component, it breaks it down into a pattern, figures out what song it is, and then sends it back to the web portion. So all of the great interface they build with the web, all of the heavy computation they do in C++. And that's part of the magic of web apps today is that you don't have to stay in the web. You can actually use the right tools for the right job. I actually want to show you another demo here. And this one in particular is built with a WebGL framework called Babylon.js. And it is a old Croatian castle. Okay, that they have recreated with WebGL. And this is what it looks like in the browser. It's fascinating, it's awesome. Should have some volume here. Okay, so I'm gonna take this same thing and I'm gonna show you at the same time how quick it is to build it into an application that I have, still here to the background. I have Visual Studio here, and I'm going to open a new project, and I'm going to go into my package here. I'm going to update the start page, and then I'm going to update the content URI. And this is all it takes to build a hosted web app in Visual Studio. Notice there's no code over there. We have a couple files that we use while we're offline, but the app still lives on the server. So you have this same great experience, but it's inside of a store application. And of course, I can control it myself. I can go through. One of the great things about Windows is I can use my mouse, I can use my keyboard, I can use my gamepad controller. And it's just a great experience no matter what type of Windows device. Now, this is an experience that runs hardware acceleration. A user would never look at that and say, I think that's a web app. So the first myth was that web apps suck. And I think I've proven that they don't, which means that this myth, and I need you to say this with me, okay? That this myth is, we're going to say busted. Ready? Busted. Let's try it again. This myth is busted. All right. Now we can move on to number two. If you don't say it with me, I'm never going to move on. We'll never make it to lunch, so. Okay, myth number two. Web apps are an affront to web standards. Many folks think that by taking a web app, you have to take your code and stick into a package, and you write for one platform only, and you then get to ignore web standards, and you fork your code. That's just not true. The basis of our web apps today are based on what we call the W3C manifest. It's a manifest file. We showed you a glimpse of it this morning in the keynote that has all the metadata. And this manifest is not a Windows thing. It's not a Microsoft thing. We participate in it. We strongly encourage it. We're part of the spec. But this is a cross-platform. Folks at Google, folks at Mozilla, folks at Apple are going to support this in their platforms as well, and some of them already do. So right there, it's a standard-based thing. The second thing that people question is when I talk about writing APIs specifically for the platform, they say, well, you're forking your code. Well, what we do today as web developers, we use feature detection. That's where we do a test, like you have on the screen, that sees if that feature exists in the DOM, and if it does, we call it. Otherwise, we either provide a different experience or call a polyfill for it. So this is a pattern we're used to today. And some of these features have not yet been standardized, which is why you might want to use the WinRT or the Cordova API set. Some of them are platform-specific, like live tiles are specific to Windows. We're the only ones that have cool rotating tiles that show you all the newest information. So there's no way that is going to be standardized because it's only a Windows thing. But we give you access to that. Now, I want to actually show you how you build cross-platform hosted web apps. And we talk a lot about Windows web apps because we love Windows, and I work for Microsoft. But web apps are already cross-platform code. When you write it for a website, you're already thinking about cross-platform. We find that most users want to build that same experience cross-platform as well. So they want to get not just into the Windows Store, but they want to get into the iOS and the Android Store as well. So we actually have a project that Microsoft sponsors that will help you build cross-platform hosted web apps. It's called Manifold.js. I'm going to show you how that works right now. And it will build your Windows 10 apps for you as a command line tool, and then it will also build ones for iOS, Android, Chrome OS, Firefox OS, and more. So let me show you how that's going to work. We're going to start out with this great little website here. It's called Bank of Contoso. It's a responsive web app. It's going to work on... Oh. Hit the button. Okay. So this is the responsive web app. It's going to work on different size screens, and it looks very much like you would expect a banking application or banking website to look. So I'm going to start with the URL here. If I can. And then I'm going to go to command line. And I've already installed the Manifold.js tool. It's really easy. Once you have Node.js installed, it runs on Node.js, so you just do npm install Manifold.js. Let me actually first create a new directory here. Okay. And then I'm going to paste in my URL. I don't need that. And then, just for fun, I'm going to turn on the debug so that you can kind of see what's happening. And then it's going to run. The first thing it's going to do is go out to the website and pull the W3C manifest. And I happen to have that source code here with me, so you can see it. So it's pulling up the W3C manifest here. And you'll see it has all the information for the icons and the scope and the API access. If you don't have a W3C manifest, Manifold.js will generate one for you. So it's actually a really great place to start. And then it's going to copy that down. It's going to go collect all the assets that it needs from your website, and it will then generate the applications for you locally. Now, we use this to generate the Windows 10 application. I'll go ahead and show you that here. Which is not yet installed, but we can fix that. Still running in the background. See, it knows it's almost lunchtime, and it's just taunting you with its slow collection. I know the internet is a little bit slow today. So okay, so now we're done. And now I'll go in here, and you'll see I have my different folders here. I'm actually going to just run Windows 10, and you'll see what happens. It's going to install right here. While we're doing that, we can bring up the phone version and show you that, because these hosted web apps are UWPs. And okay, well, I guess I'm not going to get it to work that way. Luckily, all of these laptops have a camera in them, so. My build is starting to fall apart. This is not a good sign. Okay, here's the bank application working on Windows 10. We see that. And now since project my screen doesn't work, the magic of camera, I can actually show it running for you. So the same application, right? So things like notifications, I will pop up here. We have interactive notifications that work. And you know, it also works on Android devices. And I think there might be some of you out there who have Android devices as well or might want to write for them. I guess there's also one called iOS that people use. Ever heard of it? Okay. So it'll build those as well. So that's all goodness. And all of those packages are created for you here to then go and install. We will go ahead and create an APK for you if you need it. We'll generate the Apex package for you. You don't have to have Visual Studio or other tools installed. When you're on iOS, this runs on iOS and creates the iOS packages as well. So it's a cross-platform experience that doesn't break web standards, but instead, it helps you utilize web standards to build those apps cross-platform. Okay, so myth number two, that web apps are an affront to web standards, that myth is busted. I'm going to give you that one, but next time you need to do better. Okay, number three, web apps suck at offline. So most folks tell me that they don't want to use a web app because you have to have an internet connection to make it work. And that would make sense because if you're pulling content from the web when you're offline, it doesn't work. There are actually a number of approaches that you can use that are very simple to build great experiences whether you're online or offline. First of all, you can package all the content offline if you want. We have a number of great web standards out there like AppCache and IndexedDB that store content offline so that it can be used next time, whether they're connected or not connected. You can also have a hybrid approach where part of your content is online and part of it's offline. In fact, the hosted web apps that I've shown you so far all have built-in offline files so that when you are not connected, it reverts back to the content that's in the package. That way, when you are connected, you get a full experience, and when you are disconnected, you get a thinner, lighter experience. So to show that to you, I'm actually going to go back to the demo that we had this morning called Hot Beats. All right. Now, this is what the code looks like in the package. Okay, you can see I do have an index file in here. It's called msapexair. This is the page that starts when you're offline. Okay, and this is what's in the package. Everything else is pulled from the server. And I'm going to do something really dangerous, is I'm actually going to disconnect my computer from the internet. It's really dangerous because I'm doing a session on web apps and it may never come back on, but what the heck, we'll give it a try. And then let's make sure our is disconnected. Okay. So now I'm going to go ahead into my app here. Now, normally, if I would go to add more instruments, I would get a selection menu. But since I'm offline, I instead get this fantastic 8-bit experience. So if we have sound on here, because this is really important that you're hearing this. It's not the full experience. It's all 8-bit, but it's pretty cool. Gives the user something to do. We reconnect to the internet. See, this was the dangerous part. There we go. And once the network is reconnected, it's going to notice that, and it's going to pull you right back into the online experience. So that's the type of experiences you can build with web apps to make sure that your user never gets a 404 error. They should never get a offline, page offline error. That'd be really confusing to a user. It's an app. They should get some kind of app experience. Okay? So as you can see, web apps do work offline. They don't have to suck at it. So this myth is busted. Oh, that was awesome. Good. Number four, debugging web apps is as much fun as paying taxes. So when we're in the browser, we have these great tools that make it really easy to debug. And we can debug our JavaScript, we can inspect our DOM, we can do all these amazing things. And then you go into the browser itself and you lose that. You go into the app yourself and you lose that. Well, actually, on Windows, we've maintained the F12 tooling into hosted web apps. So when you sideload one of those apps, whether it be with Visual Studio or Manifold.js, you actually can hit the F12 button and your same tools are going to pop up. Now, that's great for Windows, but we talked about how hosted web apps are cross-platform. So there's actually another great tool that's called Vorlon.js that will do cross-platform remote debugging. So this can happen not just on Windows, iOS, and Android, but on all those at the same time. It can happen when you're in a web app. It can happen when you're in the browser. So I'm going to show you that experience. We're going to go back to, let's see here. Sorry, guys, this is a little bit of an early build, so sometimes things happen. Yeah, you know it's real. Okay, now let's try it. There we go. Oh, wow. That's pretty impressive. Get everything you wanted and more. Okay, so we had the website that we were at before. Okay. So I actually already have this hooked up to an instance of Vorlon. And get a second to load. Okay, super secret password here. What you're gonna see is we have, I'll reset my dashboard, a very cool looking tool set here that actually is gonna show all of the different clients that connect. All right, so I'm gonna open up my Windows app, and then we're gonna see the Windows app connect there, okay? So I'll put these side by side so we can see them. I'm going to identify the client. And it's going to say I'm number one. So now I can go down to number one, and I can look at the DOM. I can inspect it and everything. And this is going from a browser into a web app. Now, I actually want you all to join in with me. So I'll make this as big as I can. Go to this website with your phone. Okay? aka.msbankA. That's just a little shortcut. That'll take you there. And what we're going to do is we're going to start seeing a lot of people. Wait a minute, iOS and Android phones? At a Windows conference? Just kidding. We know you use different devices, and we're going to support you in doing that and building for that as well. Okay, so we have a bunch of people on here. I'm going to randomly choose one of these people. I'm going to go down to Windows Phone number 12. I hit this button. You should see numbers pop on your screen. Who's number 12? Raise your hand. Okay. Sir, do you have children?
No.
Okay, none that you know of? Does anyone else know about any? Okay. You're going to have kids someday, okay, or you're going to know some kids, and they're going to need good college funds. So what I want you to do is I want you to go down in your app and find the account that says Kids College, okay? You have $170, which is very bad. That's not going to really do much for you. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go into the console here and fire a very special method I have hidden on the page that is going to give you every penny counts. So I should hit that. And now, how much do you have in your college fund? Did you refresh the page? Because it looks like you refreshed the page. Let's try it one more time. Or I'm going to pick someone else. I don't want to do this to you, but. Okay, number 12. You're still number 12, right? You're not? Okay, God. All right. One more time. This time I'm going to give you less money, though, because you're not really, you know, so 98 cents. And enter that. You got your money? How about that? What do you think? So, you know, it's fun and games, but really to have the ability to be able to inspect the live sessions on your site, be able to see what's happening in the different browsers and the different native apps at the same time is quite important to you as a developer. You want to make sure that you have a great experience no matter how your apps are being used, and Vorlon does that for you. So it takes the headache away and definitely makes it more fun than paying taxes. So this myth is busted. All right, last one of the day. Native apps can do more than web apps. I hear this all the time. You know, native is better than web. You know, I like C Sharp better. I can do so much more. It's not true, okay? First of all, in the web, we have some amazing specs, some amazing API sets that you just don't have in other platforms. So Fetch API is a really important one because it's the first API of the service workers family that Microsoft is investing in. And so this is an API. It's kind of like XHR you know, on crack. It's super powerful, and it gives you a lot more flexibility in your application and gets rid of some of the hardships of not being able to have full control over the content that you got with XHR. So Fetch is being worked on, and this is going to be an API that's cross-platform, so that it'll work in all the different browsers, all the different web apps that you're building. Web notifications is another one. Right now, we have to use polyfills to get notifications on all the different platforms. Web notifications will make that so you call one API that works everywhere. And it's not just about the APIs that we have on the web. We also have access to all of the WinRT APIs inside of those Windows apps. And if you're on another platform, we make it easy so you can use Cordova to polyfill to get to some of those APIs as well. But you also have to think about what we showed you with Shazam, where you can pair native code with web code and expose that so that you can see the native methods and call them right from your web code. And it gives you the flexibility of having the power of native and web put together. So let me show you what this would look like. Now, just for fun, we'll try one more time to project my screen. And it didn't. But that's okay, because we have a camera. All right, this is probably a better experience for a camera anyways, because what I'm going to do is I have an application here that I'm going to launch. And this is a typical app that you would have when you go to a conference. See, this all happened when we started working with the Mobile World Congress. And they had a fantastic web app that had every experience except NFC. They couldn't do the badges with it. They thought it was really tough. So we're actually demoing how easy it is to add the NFC. I select my badge there, and then I have this cute little NFC tag here that would represent the type of thing that you would find on the door into the session. You touch your phone to it, it registers you for that session. You'll see that I connect it, and it turns green. I move it off, it turns yellow. Connected, green, and I bet you if I turn my volume up, you'll hear it as well. So that's just using the hardware APIs. In this case, it's a WinRT API that I'm calling directly from JavaScript. Okay, so remember that other demo, the Sponza demo that we started with? Let's see how that's going to be working, but I'm going to pull that up as well. Okay, now this version of Sponza, though, you'll see it has something special in it because it has a C# component. And the reason is because I'm going to connect it to my Microsoft band here. And my band APIs have accelerometers in them. So I can get XYZ direction from that, expose it. It's an SDK you add to your app. I expose it in C#, and then I call it from JavaScript. So we bring open that same web app. Have it load. And I'll turn the camera on, and now you'll see something different. So you know I told you this was an old castle? Well, the Force is old too, right? So now it's kind of like I'm using the Force to travel through the castle. And all it's doing is it's just picking up the movement of my arms and floating me through the experience. See? Native hardware coming from a web app. Holy cow, that's amazing. See, this is the Force, right? It's like a galaxy far, far away, huh? So there you have it, an experience where you can combine your native and your web together. There isn't any SDK or any code APIs that can't be called because you can always merge those together and build your interfaces, build your logic with web where it's reusable, it works across platform, and then call those APIs from the native components when you need it. So that was our last one. Myth number 5, native apps can do more than web apps, isn't true. So this app, or this myth is?
Busted.
All right, see, fifth time's the charm. So I want to encourage you, if you're a web developer, you already have a workflow in place. You already have code that you're using. You can do more with it. You can call native APIs, you can combine it with native code, and you can get it into stores and reach more users. So I encourage you to take a step, look at what we have to offer on Windows, look what you can do with other platforms as well. You might even be a C# developer who is looking for ways to make your code reusable. Consider making part of it web. and using that to work across platform while you continue to use your native APIs on the bottom end. For more information, to learn more about what we're doing at Microsoft to get web apps to work on Windows and cross-platform, go to this URL, aka.ms/HWA-mythbusting. And that's it. So thank you for your time today. All right, we'll break for lunch.
We want Windows to be your home, not just for developing apps for Windows, but for developing apps for all devices.
Good morning and welcome to Build 2016.
It is the mobility of the human experience across all the devices and all the computing in our lives.
We want Windows.